this regular meeting of Glendale County Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by the moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. I apologize for being a couple minutes behind, keeping you folks waiting, but been trying to work out as much as possible so I can win this Biggest Loser thing. Figured I better go home and make sure I change before I have people's eyes watering up here. So, next. Do we have an adoption of the agenda?
Just a note, the new business item is on your green sheets, but it wasn't in the package. That's the new business item. It's the Eagle Scout resolution, and you've got the resolution in front of you.
Yeah, I keep my notes on mine.
And Steve, the swapping of A and B.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, yes. And then under action items, the two items that were on your original in your package are actually swapped on the agenda. So B is first and then A is there, so they're just listed that way. Because we already had the package set up on here, and they were different in the package, so.
Brandon,
go with the flow.
Okay, do you have a motion?
So made.
Second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Mr. Nichols.
Just a couple quick things. This will come on. The landlord and tenants workshops are coming up. Brad Robinson from planning has done an incredible amount of work trying to get these set up and get the speakers there for them. It's hard trying to coordinate a bunch of schedules from different organizations. But on this Saturday, the 9th, February 9th, at 9:11 a.m. in the morning at the library will be the first one. So the tenants, landlord and tenants workshop. Kelly, can you make sure you pull the flyers in for that?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So landlord and tenants workshop on Saturday from 9:11. And then next month, an evening one will be at the Fork Union Community Center, the Flavanna Community Center, from 6 to 8, and that's March 14th.
What's this for, basically?
It's a workshop for landlord and tenants' rights and responsibilities and fair housing workshop. So landlords that are in our community and also folks that rent in our community, it's an opportunity for them to ask questions and find out what the rules and regulations are.
So there have been some significant changes in the Landlord-Tenant Act in the last couple of sessions in the General Assembly.
And there's been some concerns about it. So in concert with the CARE Task Force, we've been trying to set these up. So we've got a Saturday morning one and an evening one, weeknight.
Do you know who our landlords and tenants are?
No, I don't have a list of landlords and tenants, no. And we have very low rental number compared to many counties, but I don't have a list of it. There's no way for us to know.
I can say that we are trying to make an effort to get them down to some of the ones. We know we have a lot of rentals in Columbia.
Yeah.
We're trying to get them out there.
Right.
The care, well, we put them in the post offices. We've taken them around to every organization we could find. We've distributed them all electronically. We put it in fan mail. We put it in the newspaper. We've given it to all the CARE Task Force members to hand out, so we've tried to get it all around as much as we can, but there are two of them coming up.
Have you done this before?
No.
Okay.
No.
Mr. Weaver asked the question, I don't think anybody could hear the question. The question was, when I said there have been some changes, he said, like what? And one of the ones that occurs, that just comes to mind directly, that I think is pretty significant, is they have, the General Assembly has restricted the exemptions. And it used to be that if you were a landlord and had single family houses that you rented, you were exempt from the Landlord-Tenant Act as long as you didn't own as many as four. So if you only owned one or two houses, it didn't apply. That's been revised so that now even one applies.
So anyway, those are coming up. So remember, Saturday morning, 9:00, and then next month, and we'll do some reminders again for next month, and the flyers will continue to go out. We've got some more newspaper ads next month before the March one. The dedication of the Emancipation Proclamation Memorial in Civil War Park is next Tuesday, 3 p.m., and there's been ads in the paper, and it's kind of posted on the web and a variety of other places, but and the Sorrel side has been trying to get the word out, but they're ready to go. We actually had the concrete barrier around the Civil War Park pressure wash, and we've been testing that to do it all over the barriers by the other buildings, and it came out fantastic compared to what it looked like, so it looks really good, and they did a good job. So that's ready for the 12th. And I think that, one more thing. The Farm Museum is set to open at Old Farm Day this year, kind of officially with the exhibits and things. The water supply plan, the county's 50-year water supply plan that was done in 2010, required a state buff up. Everybody's required to be looked at and a couple things updated. That update's been already accepted by DEQ, so it's just really some tweaks. And then I'd like to introduce our new public works director. Delighted to welcome Calvin Hickman as our new public works director. And most everybody in the county knows Calvin. If you've been around for a while, he's been around for a long time and had a great business doing historic restorations and then new construction before that. And has had time with engineering firms in both architecture and engineering. And we're delighted to have his skills as part of our team now on board. He and the new new assistant public works director, Dale Kreitzer, are both on board now. So one, and then Peter Welsh retires in March. So welcome to Calvin, and this is down in Mr. Weaver's district. Any questions I can answer the board? Remember, every week now for the next couple months, you've got something to do. And next week is the work session with the constitutional officers in the Morris Room. Just plan on every Wednesday for the next couple of months, unless you decide you don't need a work session, which would be fine with staff. So
I wonder why that these work sessions don't come on my phone. They usually come in brown. Yeah. I can put them in myself, but usually they would.
Maybe something wrong with my phone. When we go to close session.
It could be. It's on your calendar.
Yeah, you're talking about on the iPad.
It should come.
Yeah, it's probably an iPad. That's not okay. I use this morning.
But we can have Andy check too. If it's on your Outlook calendar, it should be on the calendar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Okay.
Any questions I can answer for the board?
If I miss a meeting, it's y'all's fault.
Do we have? Are there any questions?
You didn't hear what I said.
Oh, I'm too busy joking on front.
It's okay, I'll take the blame. It's okay.
All righty, thank you very much, Mr. Nichols. We appreciate it. I will now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please keep your comment to 5 minutes and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Seeing none, I will open. We have no public hearing, so we now move forward with the action matters. B, Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Project, A.G. Dillard Contract, Ms. Toller.
Good afternoon. Good
afternoon.
This is the last of our three contracts for Zion Crossroads.
We'd like to see you come.
I know most of you hate to see me come.
Especially when it's last.
Absolutely.
Here's the overall water project map. You see we're doing both the water and sewer lines with this contract. Just a recap, May 2018, the IFBs were issued for construction. The bid opening was October 9th at the Fluvanna Community Center. There were a total of 6 bids for this project. And the low bid was reviewed by both Dewberry Engineers and our county attorney's office. You see our estimated construction, $6,081,000. The final low bid was $4,993,625, a savings of over $1 million. Very happy about that. A.G. Dillard is locally owned and operated since 1966. They're headquartered here in Fluvanna County. Their corporate headquarters is located along the service line, so they do have a vested interest in completing quality work. Any questions?
I have one. Sort of curious, it's just a minor thing. Where you had the prices, I noticed you put it in red. And to me, it's being black because we're ahead of $1 million.
could have done it that way. Yeah.
And I've noticed them in some others in the past. But I look at that time, we're $1 million in the hole. Yeah.
They just wanted to make sure it was a different color.
Yep.
Well, they sure got my attention.
Absolutely.
We're trying to show that it's decreased from what
we
Yeah, that's right. Split it up 5 ways.
Any other questions?
I love it when you come speak because you're to the point and brief. Any other questions?
I'll make the motion.
Motion to Seeger.
Board of Supervisors approve the signed crossroad water and sewer line contract with AG Delivery in the amount of $4,993,625.44. And authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. And Mr. Booker, I know you're small.
And we would likely give a notice of receipt order by about the first week of March. It may be a little bit sooner than that, but we have upcoming, I'll give you some information later, we have upcoming the pre-con meetings with all three contractors. So,
okay, and now we move
you won't be too far off and troubles to be in the ground.
Move forward with A, Zions Crossroad Water and Sewer Capital Budget Project Carryover. Mr. Dahl.
I'm kind of keeping in the same line of ZXR. So this is just kind of a more of an administrative thing, but we had some dollars left over. Well, we had the capital project dollars that were left over at the end of fiscal year 18. And we just need to carry those dollars over to fiscal year 19 to kind of keep the project going. We're not asking for any additional county funds right at this moment. It's just carrying forward some of the original debt proceeds that we had budgeted for this project. So let's see here. And let me, I'll come back to that slide too here. But so at the beginning of fiscal year 18, we had $8.7 million. Like, remember, this fiscal year 18, and in fiscal year 18, we only spent $140,000 for the project, and that was just basically for like cost of issuance related to getting the debt proceeds. So far year to date, we've expended about $380,000+, mostly land acquisition, land and easement acquisition, and then some real estate acquisition services as well. So. Just requesting to carry over the $8.6 million to fiscal year 19 to keep the project going. We'll be coming back to the board with a more formal request regarding what funds are needed. And we'll kind of go back to the previous slide too here. So as we went through, this was kind of like our estimate moving forward. And we updated this when all the contracts came back after they came back below what we anticipated. So total project estimated around $11.6 million, and that includes all the initial preliminary engineering we did, permitting, design, and then we've got kind of like these next phases, construction administration, construction, and all that. So what was paid in was the $778 already from cash from the county. So remaining funds needed is 10.8, and then what we have outstanding in debt proceeds available for the project is 8.5. So we're looking at about a county contribution of 2.3, but remember that also includes we have $1 million kind of, $900,000 baked in for contingency if something should come up. So we don't need that contingency then, we're looking at about, 1.3, 1.4. So.
Yeah. And remember, if you look up at the top here, it lists real estate acquisition services and land/right-of-way acquisition across there, 165. That estimate was the original estimate, and it's certainly higher than that. We don't have final figures yet. We've only acquired 59 of 80, well, 62 of the 86 parcels. Some about 15 more of those we're in the process of agreeing on, and then there's about a dozen that are there will be certificates of take. But six have already been filed, and six that notices have been given. So I don't know what the final number would be, but it'll be higher than 165. And I'll give you an update on that later tonight, too.
All right. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the carryover of the unexpended FY18 Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Fund capital budget in the amount of $8,650,551.82 and reappropriate the amount to the FY19 Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Fund Capital Budget.
Second. Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. There are no appointments. Presentations. D, Shelter for Health and Emergency, Shanice Bradford.
Hi, I am the new rural legal advocate with the Shelter for Health and Emergency. Since 1979, we've been serving the District 10 with regards to empowering victims and survivors of domestic violence. One of the things that I am mainly responsible for is serving clients in Fluvanna, Louisa Nelson in Greene County. I spent a lot of time in Fluvanna, and one of the projects we're working on in the very near future is making sure we have support groups for women and child care available so they can participate and receive our counseling services. Also assisting with protective orders for both General District Court and Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. And we offer a variety of services. So we have case managers, we have two at the shelter, a child advocate. At the outreach office, we have myself, the rural legal advocate, and three other legal advocates, one of which works primarily with the Spanish-speaking community, and she actually has a few clients out in Fluvanna as well. We also have our counselor, which is also another of our legal advocates. In the shelter, and I'm gonna give you the exact numbers, we've worked with outreach clients, which means they did not stay in the actual shelter. We worked with at least 34 of those clients, meaning that they did not stay in the shelter and we either provided counseling or legal support. We received 61 hotline calls from Fluvanna, and this is just Fluvanna, not Charlottesville, Louisa, Green, or Nelson. Total nights of shelter provided was 455 to Fluvanna residents. 20 of which, 9 of which were children. And we're also working closely with the Sheriff's Department with our lethality assessment protocol to make sure officers are connecting victims and being able to measure the risk of intimate partner violence homicides in the area. Another thing that we're working on, me in particular, and our Spanish-speaking legal advocate, as well as connecting with the faith-based communities in Fluvanna and making sure that we are offering training to faith-based leaders in their congregations. And then also, we have a prevention worker who goes into schools. She has not actually gone to Fluvanna schools, but she is working to train counselors and teachers and provide an after-school club and to focus on healthy relationships as a way to eliminate domestic violence in the future. Does anyone have any questions for me?
Where are you located?
We're located in Charlottesville. Our shelter is located in Charlottesville. In the event that someone is fleeing a situation, they are brought to UVA Hospital, and then they're taken to our shelter, which is in a confidential location. I work out of the outreach office, which is right near Albemarle High School. And for those who don't want to come into the shelter because they have a pet, we have a pet safe program where someone can adopt the pet until they are able to leave the shelter. And typically a stay for someone is up to 6 weeks. If they have a lease time, it's extended for a period of time. However, one of the main concerns that we find is, well, what about my child? They're in school. Well, we coordinate with the school. Our child advocate at the shelter coordinates with the school to make sure the child is able to get transportation to and from school, so they will come from Charlottesville to Fluvanna.
How many families did you say were from Fluvanna?
I can give you.
That was 61 calls from Fluvanna.
So outreach clients that we work with that did not stay in the shelter, just outreach, meaning they received legal services, that's 34. And then residential clients, meaning they stayed in the shelter, which is 20. And of those 20, 9 children are included.
What's their typical cost of having them in the shelter?
I can't give you the exact number, but what that consists of typically would be the food that they're accessed. And we receive a lot of donations as well, but also toiletries and water to use. But I can send that information to you all if you would like it, but I just don't have the exact number of that.
And what's your annual budget?
The annual budget, well, I do have the requested budget. This is my first meeting that I'm attending, and I'm actually just here for Sarah, who deals with our funding. But I can get that information to you. I know that we have requested $9,450 for the fiscal year 18, but I don't have that other information for you, unfortunately.
Sorry.
What's the capacity of your shelter?
The capacity, so we have 25 beds, meaning that we have space for 25 individuals. We do save at least three out-of-area beds, so people that fall out of the planning district 10, so in the event that they need a place to go, they are able to stay there. Within the shelter, we house our overnight managers. We have a kitchen, we have a computer room where they can focus on, you know, looking for jobs, looking for access to certain benefits, and two of our case managers are at the actual shelter, along with a child advocate. During the summer, there is a summer camp offered to assist us. It's not a large summer camp, but just a summer camp to the residents that are there and their children. But typically, our case managers work closely with them to access and locate housing. That is one of the main challenges we seem to have with regards to making sure the Fluvanna residents are back in Fluvanna or placed back into Fluvanna.
Do the homeless sometimes go there?
So the only way a homeless person could enter into our shelter is if they meet criteria, meaning that they would have had to experience an active form of violence by an intimate partner. So typically no, unless they are experiencing intimate partner violence.
And what's the average length of stay?
What do you mean?
How long is somebody usually in your shelter?
Typically 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah, so 6 weeks. So within the first couple of days, we try to let them take a break from everything. We don't try to ask them too much questions, but probably the week after, we would have met and set an exit date for them and some short-term goals. So all of our services are voluntary, so they don't... Although the case managers are there, they don't actually have to meet with the case manager. And typically, clients will take advantage of having access to that case manager. But within those 6 weeks, they're trying to find a job. And for those who have children, it's even more difficult because they are trying to locate child care. What I have seen, in particular, especially within this area, is that the Fluvanna residents are eligible to receive some form of assistance for childcare, which allows them to also go back to work. But yes, I answered your question.
Any other questions?
No, it sounds like it translates to about $18 per day based on the number of people you're serving from Fluvanna, the asset you're giving us from that standpoint, it sounds like. So that's pretty low. It sounds like you're doing a lot for $18 a day.
Well, and we also spend a lot of time in court and connecting them with legal attorneys. And if anyone is undocumented and need assistance with regards to U visas, et cetera, we connect them with Paul Pastonic and Jerry Greenspan, who are two attorneys. Unfortunately, we do not have an active attorney at the shelter, but I myself, the legal advocate, we work with them closely. We go to a lot of meetings, interagency meetings, especially to connect people to additional resources. And we also provide transportation to and from doctor's appointments, especially if it was related to the crime or act of violence, along with just in general making sure they are connected to a variety of resources.
Great.
And Shanice comes to our meeting. You come to our meeting that we have just tomorrow.
Yes.
And you've been there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So typically
which
I'm
is good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well, Ms. Bradford, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. We'll now move forward to the consent agenda. D, minutes of January 23rd, 2019. E, First Amendment to Water Tower Lease Agreement, Ms. Tolle.
F, consent to modify equipment on water tower, Stoller. And G, second amendment to project, to project agreement number 4, Bowman, Stoller.
So just a note on the middle two you can see on the screen. Mr. Weaver had a good suggestion on those, and we've modified the motions on those in the package to specifically spell out the Bremo Bluff Tower, because there was more than one tower. Even though it spells it out in the documents, it's good to have it in the motion. So we updated the motion on that one and on the on document, sorry, on the second one as well. And so both of those have been updated to reflect the actual tower, just so it'll be on the record that way.
So the water tower, there's Bremo.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I always thought it was Falkian.
Close.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do I have a motion?
I move to approve the consent agenda, which includes the minutes of January 23rd, the water tower lease agreement, consent to modify equipment on the water tower, and the second amendment of the project agreement number 4 in Bowman.
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Is there any unfinished business? How about now we've got new business with the Eagle Scout.
And so that's the document we had in front of you. Devin Shiflett, we got this after the board package was produced, and I think it's this weekend.
Sunday.
And, on Sunday? Yeah, is it, let me look at the document here. And so I think you've got the sheet there that specifies that. Did it say on here, Kelly?
It's the 10th at 3 o'clock.
Okay. So anyway, recognition for another new Eagle Scout.
Just an Eagle Scout.
We have a plethora of Eagle Scouts in our county.
We do.
Very great.
They're doing a fantastic job and staying hard at it with the Boy Scouts.
Sure are. Sir.
I move the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Recognizing Devon Shiflett for Award of Eagle Scout Status.
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
I'd like to pass. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Motion passes 5-0. Mr. O'Brien.
It was brought up to me by Mr. Bob Dorsey that a great idea that the county could do is to do the same thing we're doing with first responders, which is extend for the volunteers and the first responders, which is extend for now the sheriff's reserve force, the same courtesy in terms of, I believe it's some personal property tax relief that we're giving them.
One vehicle.
It's for $33 for one vehicle.
Yeah, I think that would be good to extend it to that reserve force as well, too. So I'd like for the board to consider that, and if we need to review with the commissioner of revenue and so on, that's great. But I thought that was a good idea. Seems if we're doing it for the volunteers, then we could do it for the sheriff's department as well.
I have no problem with that, because they're going to actually be helping out, and they're going to buy a lot of their equipment on their own.
Can we do it except for elected officials?
Yes, I would assume that they...
We don't want...
No, I mean,
the other one guy up there get his break, so...
I would assume that he would recuse himself from that benefit anyhow.
He may not need to legally. He could be... He has it for an example. Yeah. Okay, we'll figure out what paperwork needs to be done on that and then try to get it before you sometime. It'll require an ordinance change and some processes. But we'll
you say it's only one person?
No.
The sheriff asked, how many did y'all have...
Last had 13. We hired one, and then we had 4 more before that.
We just have to make sure that it's part of the procedures.
So somewhere in there.
Remember the group of people that were pictured? The men had uniforms and that sort of stuff.
I just have to provide a list on an annual basis on who's an active volunteer.
I don't know if I...
And you want to do a lot of language in it.
The same thing we're doing for the first responder volunteers, which is we give them one car for free.
Car tag.
Yeah,
car
tags.
Okay. Give them $33.
Okay. We ought to find a way to do something more than that. But.
Sure.
All right.
That would be just for the volunteers, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. All right. Anything else? All right. I'll now go forward with the second round of public comment. Anyone wish to address the board should approach the speaker State your name and address. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Lanham County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A3, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A7 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, real estate, investment of funds, and litigation.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. O'Brien, will you bring us back into session?
Mr. Chair, I move the Atlanta County Board of Supervisors reconvene. The closed meeting be adjourned and the Atlanta County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. It resolved the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only such public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are back in open session. And now we will bring up a matter from a closed session. It's not up, nothing's up there. Mr. O'Brien.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the settlement of the case now pending in the Circuit Court of Fluvanna County having a style of Ward versus Board of Supervisors, case number 18-CL-58, as memorialized in a memorandum of settlement dated February 4th, 2019, a true copy of which is attached to this motion incorporated herein by reference. And I further move the Board of that the County Administration and the County Attorney be authorized to implement and perform the terms of the said settlement in due course.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We will now, we've already recessed for dinner. Okay, we will now come back and have our work session. We will be dealing with the budget, FY20 revenues expenditures, or the County Administrator's FY20 proposed budget.
The coming budget.
Yeah, that thing. Listen, I thought it was going like this. I'm going, whoa.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is my final budget presentation, but we've got 3 months to go to get it adopted. But I'll present the fiscal year 20 budget proposal from the county administrator as required by state code, and really give you an overview and a highlight of the budget that's in your binders that you all got on Friday. And then Eric will follow me with some updates on revenues and expenditures, kind of an overview of that. Let's go ahead and get into it. Again, I appreciate the help from all the departments, constitutional officers, agency heads, the directors, and department heads, but especially from Mr. Dahl, Mr. Pollitt, and from Mr. Sheridan and his staff. That's the group that really works on this most every single year on the front end of it. We get lots of help from all the others, but to build the budget, really need those folks helping a lot, and we really appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. Everything that Mr. Sheridan and his staff and then my director and analyst have done. The budget priorities for this year is really take a strong, hard review again of the revenue projections. We don't want to leave revenue on the table, but it could be built into the tax rate so that you didn't have to adjust taxes. But you also don't want to run the risk of being in the hole at the end of the year on revenue. So it's kind of a fine line. When you look at 15 or 20 years of revenue tracking and trending, but every once in a while you'll see on that trend you'll see a big dip or a big increase that you just didn't predict or didn't know. And so we want to be careful, and we've tightened them up as tight as we can get. We think there will be some adjustments through the budget season this year, like every year, and like I tell you all the time, the budget is an iterative process. Every single day something changes on the budget, and every single week when you have your meetings you'll get some new information on what changed in the budget, whether it's new revenues identified because the commissioner got final reports in, or because we found a math error, or because we've got a new proposal that somebody put in that saves us money, or we found a grant that's approved. It's going to change from now through April, but hopefully in the coming 3 weeks, you'll have a pretty good idea of what the requirements are, and then you can decide on what of that you want to fund.
So we always do a very rigorous review of all budget areas. I can tell you that there aren't any departments that are flush or fat. They have all been tightened down in the last 7 years, and they are lean to the point of, if you want to make a change, you have to make a programmatic or personnel change to make substantive dollar differences, because their day-to-day budgets for the current level of operations are very lean. We also look to incorporate some essential personnel requirements in there to best support Flavanna's needs. There are some support staff pay and benefits information in there. Also a little bit on the benefit plan, but I'm not sure exactly what those are going to be. We won't know what the health insurance costs are for this year until we told them we wanted a strong estimate 1st of March.
Actually, it was
supposed to be yesterday. Okay, so in within the next couple weeks, we should have a pretty tight estimate, but that will be a little fluid between now and the end of March.
You put 100 in for that one, didn't you?
Put 200 in for 200 for health insurance. Yes, and may be more than that, it may be less than that, but we just don't know. And we're going to make some recommendations to you again and show you all the options, but I think the county of Flavanna needs to start looking at, if the county pays 85% for a plan and the employee pays 15%, then when there's a $1 increase, the county pays 85% of the increase and the employee pays 15% of the increase. So there's a known change, but the county doesn't pick up everything every year. It's going to get more expensive at any time you have costs. So it's great to have a really strong, robust set of benefits for our employees. It's a retention tool. It's a thing we want to use because we don't have the highest pay in the universe for Flavanna County employees. So benefits are important, but it's also important to have the weight of benefits shared by the employees themselves. So you need to look at that and see. If you pay 90% of the plan and the employee pays 10%, if it's a $10 a month increase, then it'd be, divided up that way, $9 and $1. But anyway, we'll show you those options during the budget year. And as we find out what the increase is, if the increase was 3% and it costs $30,000, well then maybe it's not that big a deal. It's dollars that somebody has to pay, but if it's $250,000, and if you put that all on employees, then everybody's going backwards. And so you've got to figure out what the best balance between pay, benefits, and the cost to taxpayers. Anyway, and we've also tried to refine some of the future budget projections. We look at those, and our staff's goal all the time is to improve, enhance service efficiency and effectiveness. That's what we're supposed to do as a publicly funded organization, and service is what we provide, and we ought to do it efficiently and effectively, and so we look for ways on that all the time. The budget pressures are the same ones you've known for a long time. The water and sewer infrastructure needs, the E-911 system maintenance is more expensive than the old system, but you also have life-saving, actual, real-life contact for firefighters, rescue folks, and sheriff's office personnel, where they can actually communicate with each other now, really, regardless of where they are in the community. We've got some aging infrastructure. The buildings on Main Street, the old houses, the old stores, are not getting any younger, and they weren't designed to be commercial buildings for public use long-term anyway. So you need to take a look at those over time. We've got that space study going on now that'll give you some recommendations. There is an increase in cost of goods and services. Fortunately, fuel costs have stayed pretty low, so that has been helpful. And then we also need to work on maintaining competitive salaries for our staff and for the school staff, for every Flavanna employee, because it's how you retain good people. But budgeting is always a square peg in a round hole process. No one ever says, oh, we're flush with money, this is gonna be easy budget year. I think some years will be easier than others. Oftentimes I'm wrong because something pops up. This year is kind of a normal year. Nothing's easy, but it's also not the catastrophic year. Some catastrophic years like others, but it's not gonna be any easier than most of the years you've had recently. And we still have a pretty high debt load, and if we do nothing between now and 2036, well, the debt will be gone. But I don't think it's possible to go from now to 2036 without some new debt financing for something. Fire trucks, new buildings, something breaks down or falls apart. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's unrealistic to think you can go 15 or 18 or 20 years without any infrastructure changes that are costly. But it is good to see the debt going down. Debt service went down again this year, which is good. This budget is based on a 92.3% tax rate for real estate taxes. Last year's rate, the current year's rate, is 0.939, so 93.9 cents per $100 of real estate value. Because it was a reassessment year and property values went up 4%, by state code, we have to find what the equalized rate is, the rate that would bring the same amount of revenue next year as it did this year based on that tax rate. So if you've got $100 in value last year and a tax rate brought in $10 of revenue, then you have to find the tax rate on $110 of value that would bring in the same $10 of revenue. So in other words, the tax rate goes down if your property values have gone up. So the equalized rate is 89.3. So my proposal is 3 cents higher than the equalized rate. It's 1.6 cents less than last year's rate, but again, it's based on the equalized rate. It's a 3.35% real estate tax increase based on what's in the budget now. There's no change to the personal property tax recommended, still at 435. There's no change to the business or public utility personal property tax rate, still at 290. No change to the machinery and tools tax rate. And there aren't any additional new taxes that were put in or new recommendations in there, but there are a few things we can talk about. Last year you adjusted the tags, the license tags for trailers. We'd never had a tag fee for that before. Last year you put it in, it's $18 per year, and that brings in about $95,000 or $96,000 a year in revenue.
That's extra now then.
It's in this budget, yes. And in my budget document I gave you, it shows that's an increase. There's some extra dollars for that, extra for this, savings on this, and then here's some of the offsets on new costs. And it's good to look at both of those because you really want to know what changed from the year before. So you've got a baseline. And then the expenditures actually, in my budget proposal, go up by $1.7 million, about a 2.2% increase, which is about at the level of inflation. But it's $4.3 million less than what people asked for. So there's still some considerations of what departments and agency heads have asked for that aren't funded in my budget that you may want to, you will certainly be considering throughout the budget year or budget process. The budget maintains the essential services, our core human service needs, and a little bit of work on infrastructure, but it is not anything extraordinary change or big new programs. There wasn't room in there to keep it at a reasonable tax rate, so you'll have some considerations throughout the budget year to do that, to look at that. Population levels are rising a little bit faster now. We've gone up 1,001 since the 2010 census. That's 3.9% growth rate. If we stayed at a 3.9% rate, that'd be pretty manageable, but the growth rates we had back in the 1990s and early 2000s were not sustainable. That was pretty amazing. We were going to build out Lake Monticello, but it is rising a little bit faster now. We were below 3%, now we're at 3.9%. New home construction permits went up from 91 to 121. That's a good sign, that helps. But remember, the equalized rate is not based on new things. It's based on the difference between what was there and what the value of what was there this coming year. So it's not based on the new stuff, just the existing. Business and industrial permits were stayed very low. They didn't go really change much. The value of the property, all the facilities that got permits during the year went up almost $9 million. That's a nice increase over 2018. But the assessment, the most recent assessment, made a positive difference in the potential revenues available, and that was a 4% increase overall on our personal on our real estate in the county. The restricted fund balance is now at $8.7 million based on your policy. That's a good thing for the county and keeps us in good stead with the bond ratings, and so we're still at AA bond rating. And that's good for a small rural county. And the $8.7 million is a good cushion to have back. You haven't touched it in the years I've been here.
And interest rate on that is what now?
It really depends on what pot it is in. Your next meeting package will have the monthly treasurer's report, and it'll show how much you've accrued. But I don't have the number, the actual percentages in my head.
You know, it's probably right around 2.5 to 2.6% roughly. I mean,
I'm all mark.
But I think last month, I just looked at the report, I think it was $20,000 in interest just last month.
Sure.
So, which was good. Yeah. A lot better than it used to be.
Yeah. Wow.
And the unassigned fund balance is right at about $6 million right now. Remember, we told you we probably need about 2.3 for the Zion Crossroads project for cash funding for that, depending on where it ends up. So we've got to keep some of that $6 million aside. And so you might have some flexibility with that $6 million. But remember, the only way that gets built up is if you put money back into it. So at the end of the year, if you have money left in the county or the school's budget, putting that back into fund balance helps build that fund balance, because you pull it down every year when you're funding CIP items. So you've got to keep that in mind. You can't keep taking out without putting some back in. There's no tax rate that goes directly into your fund balance. It's the leftover, or things you set aside to put in if you want to do a capital depreciation fund. We'll look at all the alternatives for that this year. The one of the things I want to point out is the personal property collection rate. If you look historically, and Eric will show you this later on, Mr. Dahl will show you this later on, it's been all over the map. It's been as high as 98.5 and down to like 89.5, I think it was 89 or 90.5. It was way low. And depending on what the environment was like, in the really bad downturn of 2008, 9, 10, we had a much lower collection rate. Right now, the treasurer has collected, was it $500,000 extra in delinquent accounts? It was a big bolus.
But it's always going to be an aberration.
Yeah, it is. You have to kind of time it with the market. If the economy is good, people are paying their taxes, and you can maybe increase your personal property collection rate so you can count on those taxes,
sure,
rather than not counting on them. So
we're going to get it any one way or the other.
Yeah, you get it afterwards, but if you can incorporate it into the dollars, then you may have to be able to keep the tax rate a little lower, but you don't want to be too close to the edge. This year is the time to have a conversation with the treasurer to see if she thinks that the 93.5 can be adjusted to 94.5 or 95, maybe not go all the way up to the 98, but even the real estate, maybe we can adjust it a half percentage while the market stays good, and then you adjust it back down later on. But it's a discussion you need to have during this budget season. And you'll find that you may need to do that because you're looking for $50,000 or whatever. Revenues increased by that same $1.7 million. And so you can see that the totals there. The largest increase in revenue was just tax revenue increase based on the reassessment. And then $200,000 increase in schools revenue and $560,000 that was used for fund balance to fund CIP projects in this budget. Remember, the dollar gets split up to a lot of different places, but the vast majority of the tax dollar in Savannah County goes to public safety, education, and human services, in addition to our debt service. But the three primary drivers of funding for localities, in small rural localities especially, are always school first, and then the public safety, and then human services. And in our case, we've got the debt service too. Every county does, but ours is pretty high right now. So the top four, in almost all cases, are the top four for other counties as well. The school system funding still needs to be addressed. They've got about $900,000 extra in state, federal, and local revenue that's supposed to come in. But I'm sure when they put their budget proposal in, they adopt their budget next week and they present to you on the 20th. When they adopt their budget, I don't know what the number's going to be yet, but it's not going to be flat.
Wasn't it about $900,000?
No, I think their budget proposal will be somewhere between $1.5 million and $2 million. New money. There's already $900,000 in there new revenue, but that revenue is targeted to certain kinds of things. So if they're asking for something different, that $900,000 may not be able to use for that item, like SOL or SOQ position increase or things like that. So,
but they want a 5% increase, I understand, from the state, or at least they're looking at that. Is that not right?
Oh, the state legislature and the governor have talked about doing a 5% pay raise for SOQ-funded positions.
Right.
That would be about half of the school positions?
Like 55%.
Okay. So that would help fund part of that raise. The county would have to put in part of it as well. And then if the county wanted to do the same raise for the rest of the positions, the county would have to fund that locally. And so everything we get from the state has strings, and that would be big strings, because they're doing 5%, and you want to give the 5% to all staff of the schools, that's a big bite. And so you'll see that. You'll see any other programs or things they want, but you'll get an idea after they adopt next week. We'll have a better idea, and then they'll present you on the 20th. So, But right now, it's $900,000 in increased revenue is the only thing that I put in there. There's some expenditure increases in public safety, and that's mostly from the radio system and there's one other item that is significant in there. Oh, the fire rescue chief position in emergency management, two or three things like that, we'll go through them all. The $375 is in the budget, the broadband incentive that you agreed to with CVAC for expansion. Once the first substation is built, then we would, that funding would go through the EDA to CVAC. And there's $800,000 in there for CIP projects and equipment over last year. There's not very much that's in the CIP budget. I say that every year, but this year it's truly tight. It's very small. There are a lot of things that I just deferred or pushed off to out years. The more you defer, the more it ends up costing you. But you really need to have a very serious, hardcore discussion on every one of those items this year, because there's a lot not that people have asked for that's not included. And is it essential? If it's essential, then we may have to find some way to do it. But you may have to think about doing some of it out of short-term debt service financing rather than out of fund balance, because you don't have a lot of fund balance to do all the things that people ask for. I think there were, was it $5.2 million or something total? And we've only got about 1.8 or 2 million in the budget for funding.
But then you're gonna have to face it the following year.
Oh, you definitely are gonna, it comes sometime, yes. And you gotta pay the debt service, you take out debt, or you've gotta buy, four police cars next year if you only buy one this year, all those things catch up with you.
Yeah.
But it's hard to fit everything in a round hole when it's a square item. There is a modest 1% cost of living increase, and it's not even really a 1% cost of living, it's just a $100,000 wedge that's there, and it equates to about a 1% increase. I don't know where we're gonna adjust that or where you're gonna want to adjust it, but we put a wedge there for at least some target raises, if nothing else, to the lower pay grades. And then we do expect premiums to go up, but the budget has a wedge of $200,000 in it. There are a lot of staffing needs that were included in the budget this year. As in most years, I didn't put them in the budget. Most of them I have you decide whether you want to programmatically make that change or not. Those are the ones on the right side of the screen. Some of these other ones are really small potato things. They are actually just a board or commission pay increases, like the Central Virginia Regional Jail. It's a $5 increase per meeting, and there's one meeting a month. So it's not like it's a lot of dollars, but I listed there because none of those rates have changed for the last 5 years. And so that's why I've got them there nominally. And then a couple other positions that we've all talked about. And then there are a variety over here that some of which are pretty important and substantial, some of which may be able to wait till following years. The future year's budget planning is really taking this year's budget, stripping out anything we know is not a cost in succeeding years, adding in anything we know is a new cost coming up that we know about, and then doing a 2%, or depending on what inflation is, doing an inflation adjustment so we can get potential gross estimate for the succeeding years. And it gives you an idea of what it's going to look like if your tax rate stays in this trend and you fully fund the budget in succeeding years, what it would take as far as the tax rate to do that. So we'll be talking about that through the year. And then we really need to continue talking about revenue sources. And I'm not suggesting necessarily adding a new one without decreasing another one, but I do think Fluvanna needs to continue to look at the mix of revenue sources. So for instance, maybe you want to reduce the business tax again. Well, then, when you got one balloon and you can't do anything with that balloon but keep the balloon, well, maybe you poke out here and it pulls in here, and poke there and pulls here. You need to decide what's best for Fluvanna County next year, and then the year after. And it changes from 5-year period to 5-year period. It may not be the same, but some of these things, the business license, I still think that's an important requirement. And if you want to do a transient occupancy tax for Airbnbs, you're going to need a business license. I don't know how you're going to identify them unless you're going to have us go do web searches all the time and then go knock on doors, because the commissioner thinks the same. You really need a rudimentary business license process to be able to identify what the businesses are and then know that one pays the transient occupancy tax. But relatively easy to do, but not people, not even mention that. I always call it a registration, but it is a nominal thing. So I'll continue to handle that. The business equipment depreciation schedule, you've talked about that for several years now. We are very generous in the way you tax business personal property, and that's not a bad thing. It just is so far out of whack with what everyone else around us does because we stopped at 10 years. And, you know, bulldozer lasts a lot longer than 10 years. So I think that needs to be looked at, but that would be a good discussion to have with the commissioner. Commissioner has to set those, but it's a discussion that you ought to have with the commissioner as, you know, what would the board like to see or what the community can bear. Vehicle license fees, I don't know if you're gonna want to touch that again. You already did the trailers. And then we still continue to look at, we need to look hard at the building inspections, development, and other service fees. We do not want to price ourselves out of the market and make it hard for people to do things, but we want to be competitive. And so we continue to look at those. Those are all, on this page, relatively small dollars, except for the second one. The second one could be substantive, but again, maybe you offset it with change in rate and change in depreciation. We have a master chart that you can plug a number in. It'll show you exactly what the change in dollars or the change in taxation would be, and it's significant. If you're in Fluvanna County and you're a business, you are in great shape from a taxation point of view, even though our real estate taxes are higher. Here's your budget calendar. Got a lot of meetings between now and the end of April, and starting tonight, and then next week, the week after, et cetera. Until about the end of March, you're probably gonna be doing this mostly every week, but oftentimes you've canceled one in March and you want even one in April because you've gotten to the place you wanted to get to. But those are the work sessions coming up, so just plan on being here at least every week, and it's always at 7 o'clock, except if it's the first Wednesday of the month, then you come at 4. And this is really just a basic overview. This document that you all have in your binders that the public has out here on the rail in front is the budget proposal. The first two columns are related to this year's budget, fiscal year 19's budget, both the adopted budget that you all adopted back in April of last year and the amended budget, any changes to that budget since then. The budget requests are in the column D. The change of that from the amended budget to the budget request, up or down, and then my proposed budget in the next column, the yellow column in column G, and the change over what it was for the amended budget from the prior year. So there are a lot of things on here that are identified with these little pink blocks. As you recall from previous years, anything with a pink block on there has something to do with personnel. If it's requested, it's marked in the budget request column. If it's included, if whatever it is or part of whatever it is included in my budget, it's marked on the co-ed column as well. And then there are some where we didn't include it in the other column, and we'll need to talk about each one of those individually. But in your binder, there's also a master personnel requests tab that shows all the personnel requests, both new full-time, new part-time, new temps, and any pay changes for different positions like boards and commissions. So that proposal, and then the CIP is also in your binder, lists the capital improvements plan for the upcoming 5 years. 2.9 is what is in the proposed document, but half a million of that is in, or almost 600,000 of that is in grant funding, and the rest of it would either be in cash in your budget, 500,000, or the rest in fund balance. And I don't think you can do 1.873 in fund balance. If you go to the fund balance options in this screen, let's say we add 311,000 from the VPA escrow earnings, it decreases the debt service payment that was going to be this year, but that was out of tax rate. The core, for Louisa County, was paying $380,000 from the core, the E-1 core, that goes into fund balance. But then the CIP is 1.873. Well, that would take you down to 4 million, and then take the CVEC dollars off, take Zion Crossroads, we put 3 million there. We told you 2.3 tonight, but not only we put 3 as a wedge. Pretty soon you get into negative numbers. And so I'm not sure what the sequence is there, but those are, every time we think of something that may be affecting fund balance, we put it on this list so you're aware of it through the entire budget season. And so all these documents and the associated detail that goes with them are in your budget binders. Anytime you have questions, please contact us or come in and sit down with us so we can go through things line by line or answer specific questions if you have. Send an email, call. We'd be glad to meet with you anytime, anytime on anything, but certainly during budget season, just let us know. And then in the meantime, we'll have updated sheets for you every week. If there's any substantive changes, we'll have whatever the change was marked, like highlighted in bright blue, so you'll know what changed from the week before. Any questions I can answer for the board at this time? Just a quick overview.
How much is our sales tax up over previous year?
Okay, Mr. Dahl will cover that in his brief, sir.
Oh, okay.
It was actually a pretty good bite, but we just
That's
don't
what
know
I was
where it's going to head.
But one year we underestimated, I think you said, $200,000 in one past budget.
Yeah. Yeah, we were pretty aggressive. Actually, I wasn't, because Eric knows what he's doing. I just look over his shoulder. We were pretty aggressive on revenues this year, but we were last year too. We are kind of at the end of our rope on being aggressive and pushing the envelope on revenues, because everybody's been hearing the market's not going to stay like this forever. And we're probably closer to a downturn than we are to a robust increase, just because of the historical precedent. This is one of the longest, most robust growth periods in history, and that's not how it normally works. It normally waxes and wanes and waxes and wanes. Sometimes big valleys, sometimes big peaks. We're on a really big peak now, and it's kind of level. It's not going down yet, but I wouldn't count on it being that way for the next 5 years. If it is, that's great. But I would be careful being too aggressive on revenues and overestimating them and getting into bottom at the end of the fiscal year.
But it seems to me we've protected someone, for example, in houses. We're always going to have that revenue. Maybe they'll default, but we'll eventually get the money. So that would be at least on an even level.
Yeah, it's reasonable to consider that. But remember, if you go back and look at the delinquent payments went to patootie during the downturn. We weren't getting diddle squat. Some people were paying, but the delinquent payments went way down. Now this year, Ms. Lenhair was really aggressive on it in the market, the economy's better, and we got a buttload of delinquent payments. But if the downturn happens again, delinquents are going to stay delinquent for some time, and if you go through 2 or 3 years of not getting very much into delinquents that would help you catch up, you could be in trouble. We have charts and graphs for all the revenue sources, and we'll show you what the streams are, and then we will ask you, okay, how close do you want to be to the actuals line? If here's the actuals, how close do you want to be on your estimate? You don't want to guess too much above it. You'd like to guess perfectly on it, but it's really better to guess a little below it so that money is excess in the budget, that it goes back in your fund balance. It's the way you keep your fund balance funded. And I know you don't want to keep a penny that the taxpayers should keep in their own wallet, but they have to fund government. And you have to decide on their behalf what they want as their government to do. And then you have to decide how to fund them. And part of that is them, all of us taxpayers, putting in dollars that help keep the fund balance robust so you can pay cash for things instead of debt service too. So anyway, it's an iterative process. It'll be another good dialogue this year. There's lots of all the subject matter experts from the various departments can tell you the pros and cons of the items they want if they're not here. And we welcome any questions and any ideas you have. We can model almost anything on the fly. So, Mr. Dahl, can you cover
any other questions? Mr. Dahl, your turn.
My turn. Okay, so I'll get a little bit more granular, a little more detail, but we're not getting in like line item detail for this for revenues and expenditures. So as Mr. Nichols said, we're at an $80.5 million budget, and just kind of nominally, you know, we get about 45% of that from property taxes, 38% from the state for revenues, and on the expenditure side, the school division operations accounts for about 54% of that total $8.5 million budget, and then general government operations is about 30%. So. And then we have debt service, but that's kind of just a big look at revenues and expenditures.
And if you have any questions along the way, please just stop me. Some of these slides I'm going to try and just go through because there's a lot of information here, but some of it, if we want to get into super detail, we can do that during some of the budget work sessions. So this is just a general fund revenue summary from fiscal year 18 to 20, showing what 18 actuals were, what 19 amended is, what's in the COADS budget. So as we said, the biggest kind of increase is coming from property taxes. We increased other local taxes, which is sales tax, and we got a few other taxes in there that we could discuss as well. We increased the interest earnings a little bit more, so the $93,000 reflects a little better interest earnings. So overall, you know, we're looking at in the general fund itself about $1.4 million. So when we look at our top four local revenue sources, it's real estate, personal property, public service, and sales tax. And to Mr. Weaver's point, I've got a slide later on that kind of shows the glide slope and the trend on sales tax history. But for 18, we actually brought in $1.783 million in sales tax. And so it's kind of, as we said, we're always kind of like budgeting behind the line a little bit here. So we budgeted $1.7 million in 19. We increased sales tax about $50,000 this year. Now, you know, we're getting a little bit closer to this. I mean, if sales tax keeps on going up, then, you know, that's something we're going to have to look at going forward. Maybe we do get a little more aggressive, just as Mr. Nichols said, we don't want to get too close to the edge. So again, there's the real estate.
So that $200,000 that you
on the last page.
Yes. Yep. Where is that money then? Oops, I mean, that's a plus someplace.
That $200,000 right there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, so that's an increase of sales tax revenue. I think there's recordation taxes that are an increase.
But all those, Mr. Weaver, this column E that's on the screen there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference in revenues from the year before.
Right.
So these are increased revenues, and you know, due to the reassessment or due to increased sales tax. So all those are in your revenue base for this year. There's $1.4 million of the revenue increase. And I said the total revenue increased about $1.7 million, and it was partly because you're pulling money out of fund balance to fund things. That's counted as revenue too.
And during the budget work sessions, I mean, we can dive into the exact line items for this if you want to see what we're
charts and numbers and graphs for all of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
So your local revenues, Commonwealth Virginia revenues, we get about $7.8 million in revenue from the state. PPTRA being the biggest one, Comp Board, CSA, and obviously with CSA, the more we spend, the more revenue we get. So it's kind of a catch-22. You don't necessarily want to spend a ton, but you have to spend what you need to spend. And then just social services, we budgeted $600,000, and then just miscellaneous revenue.
What is miscellaneous?
Miscellaneous revenue could be, we get money for clerk of the circuit court for different types of functions that they handle. It could be, what are some of the other revenues?
Nice.
We get like communication taxes, we get some other types of just state pass-through revenues. And like I said, we can discuss that, but we can go more into detail of that in some of the budget work sessions, and you can see kind of where all the numbers come from. You can see the trends. Mr. Nichols and Mr. Powell and I, we went through all the revenues, looked at, you know, a good 10 years worth of trends, looking to see where we're currently in the current fiscal year. So,
and any estimate that's off on the revenues, just it's his fault because he's young.
There
he
you
can
go.
Handle it. So,
so get out of his salary, huh?
No.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get super detailed into this, but this is kind of the charts that we use in our big budget documents to show how we kind of come up with the revenue from each one of these components for real estate, personal property, you know, what dollar amounts do we exclude for non-taxable, what dollar amounts do we back out for land use and tax relief, and then we, you know, factor in the collection rate, which then gives you a total revenue. So All the taxable value figures in this slide, the non-taxable amounts, land use, those are the figures that we get from the Commissioner of Revenue. Obviously, as the budget process goes on, these numbers are going to change. The only taxable values right now that actually changed from the previous fiscal year is real estate values. The Commissioner's office is still waiting on some updates from the DMV for personal property. So we're going to get, well, I'm hoping we're going to get personal property tax, taxable value increases. So this is just kind of how we calculate all the real estate taxes. This is showing Fluvanna County's real estate tax rate history against inflation in 1991. We've always talked about this back in 2007. The county reassessed, values went up, and the county decided to lower the tax rate. There was no reassessments for 6 years, and when we had the reassessment in 2013, values dropped by, I want to say it was roughly 30%, so we had to make up that 30% drop in values at that point to get the same amount of revenue that we had before. You can see we're somewhat steady on a tax rate, on a glide slope right now, but we've got some work to do.
What jump came when we did the water project?
Excuse me?
When we did the water project and the radio project.
Yeah.
That jump came.
So this is just a comparison chart of our neighbors. The items in pink, going back to fiscal year 12, show who was the lowest. The items in green show what neighbors of ours have the highest tax rate. And then down at the bottom kind of shows the average of all those. We're not quite sure where everyone's going to be for fiscal year 20. As we've always said, we're pushing up to the edge a little bit of getting close to the 95 rate, but there are some factors that you have to take into consideration with that also, as we have a significantly lower median home price that homeowners can get into as well.
Well, and just to point out, that is not an equalized rate. So for example, the 95 cents that Charlottesville shows, they raised their property values by 30% in fiscal year 17-18.
Yeah,
so
if you actually
compared those as equalized rates, it would be very different.
Well, and they have a lot of other revenue sources.
I know they do, but I'm just pointing that out.
Yeah.
That's another way to change your...
I think the paper said last week 18% on real estate rates going up for some segments of it this year, and they're also talking about doing a 1 cent increase on meals tax and a 1 cent increase on the transit lodging tax. Yep. So that's about, I don't know, it was a boatload of money. They said what the revenues would be, like 1.5 million more or something. But you cannot, even though people do, you cannot compare a city operation and their way they do their fiscal management and their budget and the sources of money are totally different than what we are. And so while they're right next door, and it's an easy target to say, well, we don't want to be like them, cities and counties are not in the same universe. They're a totally different taxing authority.
And after that, our next closest is Albemarle County, and then everyone else kind of falls.
And we're not going to compare ourselves to a county that has more than 100,000 people.
So you're getting
out. The other one down there that got the paint. That's, we know that they have another special tax.
Oh, yes. Their tax rate is not straight 53. Yeah. No. It's a lot higher than
53. Yeah, there is. For some of the
special taxing district stuff to keep that number small.
Yeah.
But for some of the water districts, I think it's about a 30%.
39 cents.
Is that what it is? 39.
No, it's something close to that.
Yeah, it's a pretty big bite. But again, they have a totally different economic development aim because they're on the skirts of a big city and they've got West Creek and Capital One. Louisa's got two nuclear power plants. We're lucky we've got Tenaska. It's our biggest revenue source. It's fantastic.
What's Buckingham?
Buckingham has
timber.
Fields and chicken farms.
Yeah. They got a lot of wood.
Wood and timber, yes.
And no land use.
And no land use.
No land use, right.
Next chart. So as we go through budget process like we do every year, we always talk about what the per penny rate is. So the per penny amount at this point right now, based upon our taxable values and Mr. Nichols proposed 92.3 is 309,000 for the per penny amount. So, I mean, again, we've been roughly right around that 300,000 mark. So that's
so
a good.
So what now?
It's 309,000.
It's been. Oh, okay, you're right. Around.
But, yeah, we were just under
like 297.
Yeah, when I got here, it was like 273 or 278 or something like that, and it's gone up a little bit each year. But it's, you
know, it's stabilized.
Right. Yeah. It's not gone up by leaps and bounds.
No. So then, as Mr. Nichols talked about before, we kind of talked about real estate tax collection. This is just going back to 11, showing our tax rate, showing what we budgeted every year based upon that tax rate for actual collection. And then here shows what we actually collected for delinquent taxes. We budgeted an amount every year for delinquent real estate taxes. So, you know, we've always been right around, as you see, the lowest was 564,000 in fiscal year 11, and the highest has been 703. But, you know, we've come back down the last couple of fiscal years, roughly around 650. So, you know, we budgeted 625 in 19, and we kind of left the same 625 in there. So, hoping that it doesn't trend back down that direction. But so
if it goes back to 564, then could be challenged. If we've caught up in delinquents.
There's always going to be aberrations in these.
For example,
this new budget that we're working on right now, there's $180,000 more on real estate on that alone increase because we had 121 new homes.
Yes, yes. Right. $9 million in new construction.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, the equalized rate doesn't count new construction. Yeah. So.
Next, this is again just personal property. I'm not going to really get into this, but this is how we back into the personal property tax revenue number.
What's the per penny this year?
We're coming up to it. here's our personal property tax rate comparison with all of our neighbors. average is $4.03, and we're at $4.35. So I mean, we're slightly right in the middle of everybody,
except for Louisiana.
Business personal property tax rate comparison. This one's almost not even. It's a little difficult to show. It's not even a good comparison because in all these tax rates, every locality has a different type of depreciation schedule and a depreciation period that they use. So, just on the surface, this is, you know, kind of what the, you know, tax rate is, but when you compare us into some of these other localities, when you factor in, as Mr. Nichols was talking about before, what our depreciation schedule is, we are significantly lower than a lot of our surrounding.
The best rate on the page is ours because of our depreciation schedule. And so that's a good elevator conversation to have. But when somebody else has a lower tax rate, you think, oh, that's cheaper. It's much more complicated than that, and you gotta be prepared to talk about that 30-second conversation to explain why we're such a good value from a business tax point of view. But sometimes it's better to go with the flow and have a low tax rate and spread out the depreciation so that you can talk the tax rate, because that's what people see. So,
but yeah, we are competitive when it comes to what the actual tax is.
Some of them started 100%.
Oh yeah.
Starting at 30%.
Sure. Some of them are taxing, you know, 100% year one, down to, you know, 80% and 60%.
And a minimum of 10 for the life of the government, you know, like that.
Or 24, what, 15 for 10 years?
Ours goes to 10 years and then stops.
So
I mean, it's just the way it's been. Yeah. It's one of those things you want to discuss. And you can't just look at a tax rate and know that's the whole story. You have to kind of know the whole story.
So our personal property nickel calculation, so we're at 106,000. So throughout budget process, you know, if the board wants to consider increasing, you know, the personal property by nickel, that's what you're going to get. So. And then going back to as the same chart we had before for real estate, this is our personal property. You know, from actual collections, we've been from 389,000, you know, back 11. To a low of 198,000 in fiscal year 16, and you can see in fiscal year 18 we're at 492,000.
And of that anomaly, why would you think fiscal year 16 would go down to less than 200,000? I don't have a clue.
The one thing I do know, I know the treasurer's office has been more proactive on sending out DMV stops to catch up on.
But again, it's not like they weren't doing it in 16 too. 16 was just a weird year, but we were more than $100,000 down from where we'd normally be. Mm-hmm. And it's just an anomaly that it just was what it was.
So when we look at this, like I said, we budgeted 419. We increased it 50 grand in fiscal year 20 to 450, and hopefully that 490 doesn't drop out on us.
And you can see on this screen, this doesn't go to the back of the history because we have history before this, but it's from 95 down to 90, 91, 90, 92, 5, back up to 93, 5. Well, maybe it's time to go to 94 or 94 and a half, because in the good market way back, it was higher and we were doing okay. So it's something to consider during budget season this year and see what Ms. Leonard thinks.
Again, just how we calculate personal property. And then sales tax revenue. So this is our chart, Mr. Weaver, that I was talking mm-hmm. about before, what our trend for sales tax revenue has been in the county. Even when you look at fiscal year 08, we were flat from 08 until 11. And ever since mm-hmm. fiscal year 11, we've been increasing very, very steadily. So 18 has been our highest year. We were just under 1.8 million. So in the 19 budget, we budgeted 1.7 million. For the 20 budget, we've increased that by 50,000 as well. So, you know, you can see here it was a dramatic increase, and it's kind of leveled off a little bit. So, you know, as we said, we're getting more aggressive, but we're trying to hopefully stay below being too aggressive.
Would be helpful to see that with the actual budgeted number
okay. For
that year. Yep. Because, I mean, obviously, we're looking at the actual number.
Yeah.
And so when we look at the budgeted number, the differential that
we have, we have all the charts.
We have that special reports folder that's in there.
The
last
two and all the ones that aren't.
Yeah. this just shows the whole kind of glide slope of the operating budget and CIP in red, and then it shows. Stacked below it, the schools budget. So back
and the blue is part of the red.
Correct. The blue is in the red, but you know, back in 09 was the discussion that was the highest year for their budget, and you know, 18 and 19 were kind of back up to that level where we were back in fiscal year 09. Look at that general fund expenditure summary. You know, the biggest one is in public safety, and the one caveat I would say is when you see public safety, it just doesn't mean the sheriff's department. It's E911, it's sheriff's department, it's fire and rescue, it's emergency management, it's
FSPCA.
FSPCA, correction and detention. So there's a lot of departments that have big budgets that go into this. But, I mean, and then in non-departmental, we have $474,000 increase, and that's just because we just put in a wedge for that CVAC payment for $375. So overall, I mean, when you look at each of these function levels, the general government, judicial administration, public works, the budgets are not increasing, you know, dramatically. I mean, I know they're increasing in every
some are going down. Some are just barely, not even keeping up with inflation. They're fairly small. So.
And as Mr. Nichols said before, too, if you look at education here, we're showing the 1.7. That is just the county's contribution to the schools. So in the COAD proposed budget right now, they're basically flat. Flat from the county's contribution.
All we take out is the 12,000 is just due to the energy project.
Yeah. And I'm assuming when they come back, they'll be asking for a higher amount than that.
I guess that energy figure is still a sore spot.
It is, because it's not because they're not saving energy usage, it's because of cost of energy.
Sure. You know, it'd be nice to work those two figures. Mm-hmm. Here's actually what we save from the new contract, even though it's smaller.
Oh, if you were to meet, we hammered it enough. They're going to be coming back with us, and we'll have in our part.
Yeah, when we go through our final audit, they'll be showing what the actual energy savings are, mm-hmm. and then they'll
train heard that a lot.
Because even though it's more, we could have saved hundreds of dollars, yeah, thousands.
Sure. Yeah. In fact, all depends upon the cost of that energy. So. Yeah. Like I said, just glide scope of expenditure summary of those same functions going back to 11 to current.
So if you got rid of public safety and health and welfare, it'd be very easy to fund government. But those are two primary drivers too, so because this doesn't include education.
Schools expenditure summary, and this is just kind of showing a breakdown of what they generally have as far as actuals for instruction, which, you know, boils down to teachers primarily, admin and attendance, transportation, operation, maintenance, and then technology, what their corresponding budgets are.
And just a reminder, you only fund a lump sum, you're just a wallet, and there is the ability, you have changed how you do business, but the state code allows counties to fund to 9 different categories for school funding. Then you'd be doing this much to instruction, this much to transportation, this much to that, if you ever want to do that. Right now, you do a general budget, and they break it out. The schools are pretty good about breaking up what the changes are for. So
I know.
Where is fiscal year 12?
Where is it? Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the amount was. We could easily pull this chart back up at another time and put 12 in there.
Yeah.
For what?
Just year 12. Year.
We can run this back as far as you want, man. We just don't have it on this chart.
The percentage of school systems that are using the departmental budgeting method, has that changed significantly at all? Or
I don't. I'd have to do another call to VACO or to the state DOE and ask which of the 95 localities, forget the cities and towns, but of the 95 counties in the Commonwealth, how many of them use categorical budget versus overall funding. I don't know. It's not more than 50%. It's less than 50% that does categorical budget.
I thought it was significantly less than 50%.
It probably is. Yeah. I would imagine.
It's not common. I'm not sure why it's not, but maybe it's because the county decided to have an elected school board, and that's what you elected officials to manage that stuff. So that's probably why it hasn't changed. No, if it was an appointed school board.
It's difficult to answer that question. I think the important part is what are the, you know, where does the school's budget stand in relationship to sort of state averages, national averages in their expenditures? So I know that for a while we were concerned about the amount of monies being spent strictly on salaries and they were out of line with sort of averages. Those numbers have now come back into sort of a line from that standpoint. So if it seems to fall in line with that, I think, you know, it's hard for us to, as board supervisors that are not experts in their budgeting, to try to assign those dollars.
Yeah, frankly, do you have time to manage another whole budget besides doing this?
So. Exactly.
So we'll do a quick debt overview of whatever that looks like.
Please make it very quick. This is bad.
This is where our current debt level is for fiscal year 19. And when I say debt, this is debt related to capital projects. So we're just right around $97 million currently for our overall debt related to, you know, schools, water systems, public radio systems, fire
both
trucks.
Water systems are in.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. The green, when you say both, so in the green are enterprise funds, basically Zion's Crossroads, FUSD, and Palmyra Sewer. The red are county projects, and the blue is school projects. The one thing just to keep in mind, in this red, though, there's the energy project in here. It's really hard to break out what portion of that is school and county, so that whole school portion is included in the county red piece for the energy project.
And then the $5 million on the debt of the school, are we back up to paying maybe $3 million on the principal now?
Yeah.
$2 million on interest someplace in that neighborhood?
We are. And you can see, you know, every year too, we're going down. Yeah, I mean, if you see right here, even if you look at the blue, we're at about $70 million, and then you go down to about, you know, 65. So we're decreasing some of that school debt by about
further
five.
Further down to get faster.
Yeah, $4 or $5 million a year. And then just looking at what our annual debt service is, again, county projects, school projects, and then enterprise funds.
What's the big number that drops off?
The big drop right there is the radio public safety system.
Radio project.
That's when the capital lease drops off for that project.
7 years, yeah.
Yep.
That's a little over $1 million a year, I think.
It's about 1.1, 1.2 a year.
And what's the next big drop after that?
There is, right around 26, 27, there's some, I think we've got the library that drops off. It's either the library and the courthouse, and there may be a little piece of school debt that drops off right around that time. And then the enterprise fund debt, which is Zion Crossroad, goes out to 38. So just looking at our debt service, what that breakdown is, almost 2.5 of it is related to county projects, $6.5 million of it is related to school projects, which brings a total of general fund debt service to $9 million. And then when you look at enterprise funds, Zion's Crossroads, FUSD, and Sewer, it's another $680,000. So our total annual debt service that's included in this budget is about $9.8 million. And then we'll do a quick fund balance overview. As Mr. Nichols said, we're unassigned. The red is what we don't touch, is what is our reserve, and what we like to kind of leave alone is the $8.7 million. 6.1, that's what we already have committed to existing CIP projects. The 5.8, that's what's available to use for this fiscal year 20 CIP, the Zion's Crossroads project, and I'll kind of show you where this 5.8 kind of goes into the next slide. So as of fiscal year 18, we had a total fund balance of $20.7 million. Again, here's the same numbers, the 8.7, the 6.1, and there's the 5.8. So far in fiscal year 19, these are the actions that the board has taken out of fund balance. So it brings us down to about 5.4. And then this is the same slide that Mr. Nichols showed. Here's that same 5.4. And these are just some of the things, the 311 and 3, that's revenue coming in. And these are just some items that we see on the horizon. One, fiscal year 20 CIP budget for what Mr. Nichols has in his budget. We considered paying for the EDA CVAC payment out of fund balance. And then, we have a nominal just kind of wedge in there of $3 million for Zion's Crossroads. But we're hoping, as I showed you before, that we're looking at 2.3, and that's if we don't have to use contingency. So hopefully we don't need to hit that $3 million, but that's kind of the big wedge that we have right now. And then you can see, burn building and anything else, and if we have any additional JRWA costs, we're kind of getting into the negatives. Every year we're going to have a good, every year we hope to have a good year where we get additional revenues and we're under budget on our expenditures, which Mr. Nichols was talking about, which kind of, funds our fund balance every year. And I have a slide, I'll kind of show you how that is. So, and this is the last slide. So the top line is what our total fund balance has been going back to fiscal year 08. So we've been roughly right at about $20 million going from 08 to current. We increased a little bit in this big dip here from 17 to 18. That's when the board decided to pay off some pieces of debt early. So that's what the big drop right there is. This blue line pretty much shows how we ended up in the budget every year. Additional revenues that we received above what was budgeted or expenditures that were below budget. So you can see we've been probably right from fiscal year 13, we've been right around $3.5 to $4 million to the good every year. But at the same time, we're using that fund balance to pay for the CIP and pay for those projects every year. So the blue and the red basically equals the purple right there. So you can see our overall change in fund balance, this purple line, has remained pretty static and pretty consistent for the last 4, 5, 6 fiscal years. And again, we only had this kind of drop right here is because the board decided to pay some principal off a little early. And that is it. We can take any questions, obviously, as we go into budget work sessions. Moving forward, we'll have lots more information for you from charts and data and And then we'll get into more detail.
And if you're not sure what something means in your binder, if you got a department budget or a line or something, you're not quite sure why is it like this, or what, just give us a call, let us know. Send us an email, come in and sit down and talk to us, because that way it's much better to be forearmed with the knowledge before you get to a work session, so you're ready to go on to the next thing you want to talk about and stuff. So you use us liberally when you need to.
And I don't know what, I'm not sure what meeting we're talking about, the CIP, but the CIP, I mean, there'll be a lot of discussion about that, because there's a lot of items in that CIP, just with where our fund balance is, that we just, it's gonna be difficult to fund them all. And there was a lot of requests in there, so we had to trim back quite a bit.
And we're hopeful on the SCBA grant, but we don't know.
And that could be a $1.5 million bill.
Yeah, well, about 900,000 total is what we're down to. We think 850 or 900,000. Well, if we got a grant, we could get most of the grant money. But if we don't, we're going to have to spend at least a $500,000 of it pretty early on this year, right at the end of this year, because you got to get the SCB is replaced. So,
thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right. Is there anything else, Joe, we need to discuss this evening? And I can table a motion to adjourn.
That's definitely wrong.
Thanks, staff, for all their
hard work. I definitely have the wrong chart up there, so just plan on the 13th of February, 7 o'clock. Forget the rest of that stuff. Okay. Ignore the man behind the curtain.
Oh, can we get a motion to extend, please?
So may have moved that we extend until 9 o'clock.
Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
Do I have a second? Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We adjourn.